Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, June 17th. I'm Bridget Bergen, WNYC's City Hall and Politics reporter, filling in for Brian today. Today we're joined by someone who has a record of speaking his mind to curb police misconduct, and that's Chuck Rosenberg, currently an MSNBC legal analyst and host of the podcast The Oath with Chuck Rosenberg, but also the former acting head of the Drug Enforcement Agency, or DEA, that stepped down from his position a few weeks after emailing a statement to all employees in his agency explaining how President Trump condoned police misconduct. Police misconduct has been a hot button issue in the U.S. for years, but especially these past few weeks. We have protests all over the country, over the world, statues being toppled and legislation being written, all to try and address the problem. To talk about the protests, the Trump administration, his podcast, and more is Chuck Rosenberg. Welcome to WNYC, Chuck.
Thank you, Bridget.
So let's get to it. You stepped down as the acting head of the DEA in 2017 after President Trump told law enforcement officers, please don't be too nice when handling suspects of crime. Why did that strike a chord with you?
I've spent my career in law enforcement, Bridget, as a federal prosecutor at the FBI and ultimately at the DEA. And we take a lot of time and spend a lot of effort trying to build bridges with the communities that we serve. We're not perfect. You know, we falter at times. But overall, it's really important to those of us in law enforcement to build those ties, maintain those ties. And what the president said, and by the way, it was at a speech in Suffolk County, New York, in July of 2017, undermined everything we stood for. The president, in my view, condoned police violence, told officers that they didn't need to be nice or kind or gentle when putting suspects into a police car. He later said he was joking. I don't believe for a minute he was joking. And we have a special obligation to those in our custody. I mean, we may not approve of what they've done, but we have a special legal, ethical, and moral obligation to care for them. And what the president said cut against that, and I found it deeply troubling and deeply disturbing.
Is there anything you would want to say in response to the president that you didn't get a chance to say before you left?
No. What I had to say, I put in an email to my workforce. I didn't believe for a minute that they would behave the way the president was urging police officers to behave, but I thought it was important for somebody to clearly articulate what our values are. Look, like I said, I'm biased. Your listeners need to know that. I grew up in federal law enforcement. I believe it's a virtuous thing, albeit with occasional bad actors and bad acts. But the tone has to come from the top. And for the President of the United States to condone police violence, to me, was reprehensible.
You were in charge of a policing agency that had about 10,000 employees at the time. And you've started to touch on this, but do you feel a special responsibility to speak about police brutality in that leadership position?
Well, I think all leaders should feel responsible for what happened in Minneapolis. What happened in Minneapolis was sickening. And good cops feel the same way. They're sickened by what they saw. And so, leaders should talk. Leaders cannot remain silent. Silence is assent, and that's what troubled me so much. I understand that not everybody wants to get involved in every battle, but this one is too important. You can't stay on the sidelines when you see something like that, and you need leadership from the top. As I said earlier, moral, ethical, and legal leadership, and I don't think we've had that from President Trump on this issue, and I don't think we have it.
Do you know if the agents in the DEA responded to Trump's call not to be so nice with suspected criminals?
I don't believe they did. As I said earlier, I believe they are good men and women in that line of work for the right reason. I don't think they needed to be reminded that this is how we treat people in our custody. But nevertheless, I think it's important for leaders to articulate the values of an agency. That in and of itself doesn't fix every problem. right? And the DEA, like any other organization on the planet, including WNYC, has its problems. But leaders have an obligation to set expectations and articulate the values that they want the men and women in their organization to abide. And so that's why I wrote what I wrote, and that's why I've said what I said.
Despite some sweeping legislation in the House that aims to really significantly improve tracking and prosecuting police for misconduct, as well as President Trump's executive order encouraging police departments to alter their behavior, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said that major reforms in the House bill will not be approved in the Senate. Why do you think that is?
It's hard to figure that out sometimes. I'm not a political person, and so I don't like to guess at politics. I will say this, Bridget, if I may. I read President Trump's executive order. I think there are some things in there that are valuable, like more training and better and more uniform policies, grants to departments that need money, also a good thing. But none of those things in and of themselves are going to fix the underlying problem. The underlying problem is much deeper. It's much more ingrained. And by the way, whatever Mitch McConnell or the United States Senate does, the fix has to come in the end from, you know, our states and our municipalities, from our cities and our counties. It has to come at the local level. Can I explain why I think that's true?
Please do.
Right. So we have 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States. The federal sliver of that pie is really small. There's, you know, several dozen federal law enforcement agencies. The big ones you've heard of, like FBI and ATF and DEA and Secret Service, and a number of smaller ones. But the FBI, for instance, has about 13,000 men and women who are special agents. That makes it, and this is a stunning number, about one-third the size of the New York City Police Department, meaning the federal piece of this thing is relatively small. 18,000 law enforcement agencies throughout the United States, and that's where the fix lies. We need to fix culture in those departments, and here's what I mean by that. When a good officer, when a good cop sees something that troubles them, can they come forward? Does that officer feel that she can report the misconduct to her lieutenant or to her captain? And if she does, is she incentivized, rewarded, or is she, you know, ostracized and shunned? I think silence is assent. And what I worry about the most is what message are we sending to the men and women who've chosen this very difficult line of work, who see something that's bad, who see something that unsettles them, or see something that's even criminal, like we, and who don't feel that they work in a culture that will support them if they come forward.
Listeners, you are listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Bridget Bergen, WNYC's City Hall and Politics reporter, filling in for Brian. And my guest is Chuck Rosenberg, currently an MSNBC legal analyst and host of the podcast The Oath with Chuck Rosenberg. He's also a former U.S. attorney and the former acting head of the Drug Enforcement Agency. And listeners, we'd like to hear from you. How do you think this administration has been handling the threats of police brutality? Do you think things are going to get better or worse? Or maybe you have a question specifically for Chuck Rosenberg based on some of what he's said this morning. Give us a call at 646-435-7280 or tweet at Brian Lehrer. We're going to go to Myatt in New York City. Welcome to WNYC.
Yes, good morning, Bridget, and to your guests. It's Maat, actually, M-A-A-T. It's the comedic Egyptian goddess of truth, right, and justice. Chuck, I first want to respond to what you were saying about the culture of policing. It recently came out that a dispatcher was actually seeing the footage of what was happening to George Floyd. And she began her talk to the supervisor by saying, and this shows the culture, that you might think me a snitch. She went on to say that three of the men were on top of him. The supervisor said, yeah, it's a takedown, and we need to look at this idea, who gets taken down, as it were, on the ground. And obviously there was no follow-up, although he claimed he would be looking at it. So that's very telling. But my main question is regarding the war on drugs. When Nixon and Reagan, and we know through Ehrlichman that he was specifically Nixon targeting black people, it's not dealing with who gets to bring in the drugs at the ports and the airport or even the middle level. It's about over-policing and, of course, the cannabis issue now that John Boehner is a part of that billion-dollar boom. So those are my two areas of concern, a culture that must be transformed, and the war on drugs. We need another model, and I'll listen over the air. Thanks for taking my call.
Maya, thanks so much for calling WNYC. Chuck, what do you make of those questions about the culture of policing and the impact of the war on drugs kind of reaching into the future?
Yeah, sure. And Maya, thanks for the questions. I'll take the second one first. So a couple of things. First, I never liked the term war on drugs because I think that imagery is all wrong. We shouldn't be at war with our own country and our own citizens. Second, it's really important to me that we think of much of the drug problem in the United States not as a criminal problem, but as a public health crisis. You know, if DEA agents are doing their work correctly, and I'm confident that they are, they're working up the chain, not down the chain. There are very violent cartels and street gangs that distribute this poison on our streets and that are profiting from it. They're heavily armed. They're very violent. And that's where we ought to focus our work. If we work down the chain, if we work at the bottom of the ladder, you're really talking about people addicted to drugs. And to me, that runs the risk of over-criminalizing a public health issue. And so that's how I think of it, addiction as a public health crisis that needs a public health solution, not a criminal justice solution, but important work for the DEA at the very top, where they confront very violent drug cartels and drug gangs. To your first question about the culture of policing, I think what you said illustrates it nicely, Maya. The notion that some dispatcher saw something that troubled her and reported it. That's what we need people to do, whether they work in hospitals or for airlines or in police departments or in school districts, right? If there's something wrong, you need to be in a culture that will permit you to come forward and describe what you saw. And then hopefully you have the leadership that has the, you know, the values, the morals, the ethics to act on that. You know, we'll see. But I'm glad the dispatcher spoke about something that bothered her. I don't know fully what the reaction of the department was to it.
Let's take another caller. Let's go to John in Queens Village. John, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. A question for Mr. Rosenberg is, how do we get rid of the situation between the union, especially in New York City, and the adversarial situation that we seem to see there between the union and between a lot of the people, the populace? Now, I understand the union has a job to do, but it is very, very adversarial, as far as I can see, between Mr. Lynch and Mr. Lynch and many of the city agencies. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you,
John. Thanks so much for your question. And Chuck, I'm not sure how deep you are in with New York City police union politics, but if you have any thoughts there, or more broadly, how police unions nationally and law enforcement agencies kind of work sometimes at cross purposes, where the unions have rhetoric that might not align with some of the reforms that the law enforcement agencies are trying to make.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of the New York situation, Bridget, but generally, I know chiefs around the country who have complained that the unions are very powerful and thwart attempts by the chief to manage the departments underneath them. Now, part of this is governed by contract, the collective bargaining agreements between the police department and the union that represents the officers. And I don't mean to suggest that the unions are solely villains in this. I mean, a number of things that they do for their rank and file are important. But in terms of discipline, I think that the unions and the chiefs actually have more in common than they might imagine. that they both have an incentive to get rid of bad officers, because bad officers make the job much, much harder for good officers. And I spoke earlier about culture, Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if an officer sees something that's wrong, and there is no way for the chief in that department to punish the bad actor, something short of the horrific murder of George Floyd. I mean, that officer in Minneapolis, of course, was fired and charged in court with homicide. But if a chief can't take action, or takes action and the union thwarts it, then the other officers in that department are all getting a very clear message, which is coming forward doesn't matter. It doesn't help. Why bother? Because the only thing that will happen is I'll be ostracized. So I think the union and the leadership of the departments have more in common than they might imagine and have to work toward a common solution.
Let's take one more caller. Alec in Queens. Welcome to WNYC, Alec.
Hi, how are you? Mr. Rosenberg, thank you so very much for your voice of reason. I wish that there were more voices like yours within the NYPD and our leadership. I'm a member, actually, of the NYPD for over 20 years. And there is absolutely no place, you know, within the department that anyone can go and actually voice their concerns about what's going on, especially when you're a minority. There are microaggressions towards minorities in the department where perhaps it's not so blatant, but we do feel it, and we do feel like we're shunned and we're pushed off to the side. Instead of having our voices heard, the department shies away from it. And I believe that a lot of it has to do with the leadership in this department. That mentality is so entrenched, and it's been there for decades, and they just refuse to change.
Alec, thank you so much for calling WNYC. A lot of frustration there, Chuck. What is your response to some of what he's voicing?
Well, I hear that frustration from lots of good officers around the country. Alec, thank you for your service. This is a really hard job that we ask people to do. And most people do it pretty darn well. But again, we need to build a culture, right? The organization has to be receptive to problems within, and that they have to find a mechanism to fix it. That's hard for human beings to do. It's hard in school districts. It's hard in accounting firms. It's hard in hospitals. It's hard everywhere. It's hard anywhere that you put human beings in the same place. But it's particularly important for cops to get it right because, and Alec knows this, if you run into a bad accountant or a bad teacher, the consequences are not tragic. If you run into a bad cop, they can be. And so, look, like I said earlier, I'm biased. I'm a fan of law enforcement. I grew up in it. I have a lot of respect for the job that these men and women do. But the culture that Alec is describing is something that you hear around the country. And again, remember, with 18,000 law enforcement agencies, this isn't going to be one fix mandated from the top based on training or grants or, you know, uniform policies. It's going to be something that needs to look a little bit different everywhere. You know, Bridget, one good analogy, there are 14,000 school districts in the United States. We all know some are well-resourced and some are dramatically underfunded. And fixing a school in one part of the country could look very different than fixing a school in another part of the country. We know that intuitively.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true for police departments.
Chuck, you're in the third season of your podcast, The Oath with Chuck Rosenberg. What topics are you looking to address this coming season?
You know, thank you for asking me that, Bridget. This season, we're sort of broadening a bit. So in the first season, I spoke with lots of folks from my professional background in the Justice Department community and at the FBI. In the second season, we included some military leaders like Admiral Bill McRaven and Admiral Jim Stavridis, incredible, remarkably accomplished gentlemen with very compelling backstories. This season, we've broadened it even more. Last week, we had civil rights activist Maya Wiley on, who, by the way, had been in charge of the Civilian Complaint Review Board in New York, which assesses police misconduct.
Absolutely. I got to talk to her this week.
Yeah, she's great. She's awesome.
Yeah.
really thoughtful, really smart. Today we released an episode with Vivek Murthy. Vivek is a Harvard and Yale-trained medical doctor who became the Surgeon General of the United States. And you know how Surgeons General focus on different maladies, some on, let's say, addiction or smoking or obesity. He focused his work as Surgeon General on loneliness, believing that loneliness was both a cause of and a consequence of chronic disease. And he's just a fascinating man. And so we released that today. We have Kathy Sullivan coming up, the first American woman to walk in space. Fiona Hill, the former National Security Council staffer, will be a little bit later in the season. So we're trying to broaden it a bit. But the idea is no politics. We tend to stay away from current events. We just try to have thoughtful conversations with interesting people.
I want to bring in another listener for you, Chuck. This is Anne in Manhattan. Anne, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call.
And what's your comment for Chuck Rosenberg?
I've read a book recently by John Dickerson, who used to be from CBS, and it's fascinating. He talks about the making of the American president.
Anne, did you listen to the show yesterday?
Yes, I did. That's why I got with the book. So I can't thank you enough. This program is must listen to on a day basis if you can. But my question really to Chuck, if I may call him Chuck, is that John made the point that instead of wondering if somebody speaks well or is sort of presenting himself as truthful or whatever as a candidate, that the better thing would be prior to the election if the candidate would discuss the various people that he's thinking to fill the various cabinet posts, because the presidency is such a job now that for one person it's huge. And my question to Chuck is, would he allow himself be considered, because I think he's such a straight-talking, honorable, interesting man with everybody's wishes. He's bipartisan, but if Joe Biden could talk to him, I think that he would be a wonderful candidate for a cabinet that we really need this time around to be remarkable, meaning that the people... Yes, sorry.
And thank you so much. That's okay. Thank you so much for your call. Let's see what Chuck thinks. Are you in conversations with the Biden campaign about a cabinet position, or would you consider one?
I am not. Let me first tell and you can absolutely call me Chuck, and thank you so much for incredibly kind words. Look, I had the privilege of being appointed both by President Bush, the second President Bush, as U.S. Attorney, and under President Obama to run the DEA. And in between, I work for both Bob Mueller and Jim Comey at the FBI. And so here's my view, Anne. If I have an opportunity to serve my country, if someone thinks I can help, I'd be honored. But, you know, those things that you discussed, being a member of a cabinet for any president, is always a long shot. If someone thinks I can help, all they have to do is ask. But it's not something I'm campaigning for, and not something that I expect. I was honored to be part of the Justice Department for more than two decades, and I miss public service.
Well, you had a strong endorsement there from Anne, and that's always nice to get that. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining me, Chuck. That's all the time we have for today. My guest has been Chuck Rosenberg, former U.S. attorney, former acting head of the Drug Enforcement Agency, MSNBC legal analyst, and host of the podcast The Oath with Chuck Rosenberg. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Bridget.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at wnyc.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.